Rohi Boro.
Good morning, Your Honor. David Goroff on behalf of Appellant Sam Rohde. Your Honor, the decision below represents a troubling, unprecedented extension of the doctrine of alter ego. This is the first case where a party has gone out of his way to see that a creditor gets paid only to be rewarded with personal liability. And the court below found Mr. Rohde liable even though he received...
Could I stop you right there?
Sure.
Which is sort of mean, but okay.
Yeah, although all of MP's bills may have been paid, it is not really accurate, is it, or maybe, to say that MP paid all of its bills, given that they were paid by MH?
But MP, Your Honor, was...
Isn't that arrangement just further evidence that MP was set up so as to have insufficient assets to meet its debt? Because Mr. Rohde paid the bills through MH rather than by providing sufficient capital to MP for MP to meet its own obligations.
In this case, Your Honor, MP becomes on the contract because of an error on OCV's part. It advises the negotiating partner it had, who was Mr. Patterson, MH's general manager, that MH cannot be on the contract, and he asks for any other facility, any other avenue. And that is when Mr. Patterson proposes MP. And it is always known, because there is a history, a course of performance and dealing from the beginning, that it's going to be MH that pays.
You know, let me just tell you how it certainly appears to me at this point, but you can dissuade. MP appears to have been designed to protect the assets of MH and Mr. Rohde against any claims, while providing MH all the benefits of the contract.
MH is broke.
Right.
No, MH is in bankruptcy, Your Honor. It's originally a Chapter 11.
That's the whole point. MH has no assets.
No, Your Honor, when the VSA was signed, MH was not in bankruptcy. It didn't go bankrupt.
Oh, I understand. I'm really responding to Judge Rovner. What I don't see about the case, so this is what you should explain. I don't see what is the how does Rohde benefit by bringing MP into the case? That's what
he
I'm
doesn't, saying. Your Honor. He didn't bring it, and this is why it's not an alter ego issue. If you compare it to, let's say, Wachovia, where you have a shuffling of corporations so that the Leon Greenblatt can personally get $32 million, Sam Rohde got not a penny here. And much of the time, remember, Judge Rovner, first of all, MP was created in 1999. At the time it was designed to be a real estate development company.
Okay, well then am I completely off the wall here if I think that MP was inadequately capitalized, failed to observe corporate formalities, was insolvent at all relevant times, lacked corporate records, and was, in effect, merely a facade for the operation of the dominant shareholder, who is Mr. Rohde?
It was not as – well, you're wrong as to the last one, because Mr. Rohde received no personal benefit from MP. But you have to also look, Your Honor –
Well, personal benefit is, you know, like not having – to pay if you're in an accident.
But Mr. Rohde wouldn't have had to pay. Markwell Hillside would have had to pay if it's an accident. Mr. Rohde, and the only other time that this came up was with the van lease. And that's why this was suggested, because Daimler Chrysler had a van lease with Markwell Properties nominally to shield liability, which is what corporate affiliates can do. Mr. Rohde didn't shield himself from any creditor. He didn't shield himself from any personal liability, and he stood behind that liability from Markwell Hillside. He guaranteed that liability. That was the only prior use of MP that's at issue in this case. In this particular instance, Your Honor, it's not enough that you find inadequate capitalization, et cetera. You must find inequity and injustice. And you cannot do so when, first of all, why did we get MP instead of MH? MH had had a 2-year course of dealing and contract with OCV when they decide to renegotiate the contract. He negotiates for months, David Redpath of OCV, with the general manager of MH, and he admits he knows who owns the building, which is MH. At the end, Redpath goes back to OCV to get corporate approval and goofs. He puts in the wrong name, and so they deny it. He comes back and says the original contract, which would have been MH, Your Honor, it's obvious, cannot go forward. Do you have any other avenue or any other facility for doing the contract? And Mr. Patterson, Mr. Rohde's not involved in these negotiations at all, suggests MP and tells them that MP does not own the hotel if there was any doubt. So there is no inequity or injustice there, Your Honor.
Yeah, but then, didn't Patterson also misrepresent to... Give me a minute.
Redpath?
No, to OCV, the credit... the credit worthiness of MP?
No, there was
How's
no...
that total understanding?
There was no question of credit. MP was never designed to pay these bills, Your Honor. Just like, for example, if you have a child who signs a lease, you may stand behind that child and pay all the rent. That doesn't... At that point, your child's credit history, capitalization, et cetera, is irrelevant. The fact is, as long as Mr. Rohde had anything to do with MH, OCV was paid month in and month out without complaint on checks that said Markwell Hillside doing business as the Holiday Inn Hillside. Each month they cashed the checks without complaint. They went for years and never said Mr. Rohde was doing something nefarious, MP was their actual contract party. A week, Your Honor, into this bankruptcy of OCV, which occurred a week after OCV signs it, Markwell Hillside goes bankrupt. So it's under court supervision. Mr. Rohde asks for permission to keep paying OCV through MH, and OCV is involved. It has a notice of creditors. It gets that permission, and now the checks say Markwell Hillside, debtor in possession, and they then have notice too, and they don't object. First of all, that is sufficient to amend the contract. So if MP is the nominal name on the contract, you can amend by performance. And we have case law we've put in that has never been disputed and wasn't addressed by the district court below. Second, when you're talking about alter ego, you have to look at personal. You're talking about benefits MH got. Remember that in April of 2006, Mr. Rohde is fired from MH. He has nothing more to do with it. It turns into a Chapter 7, and a Chapter 7 trustee, Richard Fogel, takes over and continues the same thing. He keeps paying Markwell Hillside. He's paying OCV. OCV then waits, watches its sale. After it's sold, immediately starts to negotiate with Roy Patel, the successor owner. This is not someone who didn't know what was going on. They knew Markwell Hillside owned the hotel. That's supposedly the misrepresentation here, Your Honor. And Mr. Rohde was not part of negotiations. He relied on his general manager of Markwell Hillside to negotiate. He came in. He met with Redpath and Patterson for 5 minutes, signed on the line because he thought it was a renewal. So this is not a case where we plotted, Mr. Rohde plotted, to try to get MP to protect MH. At the very least, Your Honor, you have MP standing in the way to protect MH, but then you have to double pierce under the Torco case and other cases we cite, and Judge Gettleman didn't even consider the notion of double piercing. The simple fact is, Mr. Rohde did not receive, OCV was not Mr. Rohde's creditor. He didn't know one dime. The court below said it couldn't tell what benefit Mr. Rohde personally got. He got nothing. In bankruptcy, Your Honor, Markwell Hillside wasn't paying Mr. Rohde anything that the court didn't approve. And at some point, he was paid nothing. Correspondingly, you have to have damage. There is no damage here to OCV. If Markwell Hillside's name would have been on the contract, same result. September 2006, it dissolves, and you don't get any money after that, whether it's on the contract or not. And OCV could have had the contract with Patel. Patel has an affidavit that says they overplayed their hand. So the facts of, if you compare this where Rohde gets not a penny, There's no documents under the table. There's no sham transactions. It's told what the purpose is. They know that this is not designed for the hotel lease. And by the way, Your Honor, if this is nefarious, Judge Doyle approved the assignment of that lease to Markwell Hillside in the bankruptcy, and no one complained. So if this is something that shouldn't happen, the van lease was assigned to Markwell Hillside specifically, getting rid of Mr. Rohde, getting rid of MP, and no one ever complained that the lease was unfair. So you have no basis for finding damage. There's an admission below that they can't tell why ownership was even material. The invoices are not to the owner. The invoices are to the hotel. The payments have always been accepted, you know, from Markwell Hillside, and they continue to be. And Your Honor would let OCV completely off the hook. Why does OCV get to say, because of Mr. Redpath's error, you can't use the entity we've been talking about for 4 months? Do you have another? And then use that other as a basis for claiming alter ego liability for the first time in 2009. Finally, this is a contract damages case. First of all, under Illinois law, you need something extra when it's contract damages for alter ego liability. Something, as the case law says, like fraud. Judge Gettleman admits you have no fraud here. David Redpath, the only person who talked to Mr. Rohde, admits there was no fraud. Second, you should not have alter ego liability when the only issue is contract damages, and that's all OCV is seeking.
Let me just get into the fraud for just a second, because we've held that it is enough to show that a corporation was set up in a way that it's likely to have insufficient assets available to meet its debt.
Your Honor, it wasn't set up that way. It was set up to develop the Motor Club building. At the time it was set up, all of the forms were filled out. It entered into a contract with Marriott, which is in the record, which never got finalized. It was being finalized on 9/11.
So is there any way that a rational judge could think that MP was set up as an empty shell corporation through which contracts that actually benefited MH and Rohde were funneled? There's no way.
There's no way, because also remember, Mr. Rohde didn't run MP at the time. He had Michael Rohde, who was an accountant and an attorney, who was actually doing the day-to-day stuff until December of 2004 for the first 5 years. Mm-hmm. Mr. Rohde was 50% owner. It was not his shell. And that's completely ignored. Judge Gettleman below finds that there's no other officers. That's a simply erroneous fact. So, if I may, Your Honor.
So, MP absolutely wasn't designed to protect the assets of MH and Rohde against any claims.
First of all, yes. And you see there's nothing of Rohde's
yes,
that was protected.
Yes, it was, or yes, it was.
No, it was not, Your Honor. It was set up to be a real estate development company. You see contracts from or negotiations with Athens Hotels in the record, JMJ Hotels in the record. You see unrefuted testimony that it negotiated with Jumeirah, Hilton, Sheraton to develop the property. It had a contract that was going to finality.
The real point is that MH assets weren't shielded from the
right.
Credit.
Well, that's also true, Your Honor.
Drained away in the bankruptcy. Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Goroff.
Thank
Mr.
you, Your
Schieber.
Thank you, Your Honor. Stephen Schieber on behalf of On Command Video Corporation, plaintiff and appellee. Do Your Honors wish me to address the jurisdictional issue at this time?
No.
No.
Okay.
I don't.
Just to quickly address the point as to what benefit did Mr. Rohde receive. Mr. Rohde drew his salary from Markwell Hillside, which owned the hotel. It was Mr. Rohde's belief, and Mr. Patterson's admittedly on the record, that Markwell Hillside wouldn't have passed credit and wouldn't have been approved for this contract. Mr. Rohde benefited by...
Well, OCV was perfectly happy to deal with MH.
With MH?
Yeah, with MH.
Because if OCV contracted with MH, wouldn't Rohde still have received the same salary payments?
If OCV had contracted with MH...
Wouldn't Rohde still have received the same salary payments?
That's possibly true, but I don't believe that's relevant, Your Honor, because The fact is that Mr. Rohde knowingly, willingly offered up Markwell Properties, MP, because
he was asked to do it.
And
MH's assets, which was what OCV was looking to in the event of a dispute, those assets were all given to OCV or other creditors through bankruptcy. I don't see what was the
that is not correct, Your Honor.
Harm to.
With all due respect, I want to correct. You know, there were many misstatements.
When
many
you say MP was substituted for MH, but MH continued paying OCV, and OCV didn't complain and say, "Wait, who's this? Our contracting party is MP."
That's correct, and OCV didn't have to complain. It was getting paid the
by the wrong person. I mean, it's odd, you know, if you make a contract with X and you find that you're being paid by Y, you think you'd raise a question, say, hey, what's going on here?
There was no reason why it would have raised
a question. There's a reason to. You're being paid by the wrong company.
Mr. Groff argues that this created some type of ratification. I mean, okay, if he's either got he has 2 points based on these checks. One, yeah,
explain what is the harm to OCV from the fact that MP at OCV's request was substituted for MH. It certainly didn't do anything to shield MH's assets from OCV. It got them all in bankruptcy.
The harm
so
is.
What's the harm?
The harm is, Your Honor, that On Command Video wound up entering into a contract with an asset-free shell.
What is the harm concretely? What is the loss in money to OCV from this substitution?
That's hard to tell.
The company is substituted for MH, and then OCV has all its remedies against MH. So what is the loss to OCV from this substitution?
That's hard to tell. If
there is no loss.
If On Command had
what
actually
is
been
the loss?
If On Command had
what,
been
a, don't say if. Tell me what the loss was.
Whatever On Command might have received had it actually been notified of Markwell Hillside's bankruptcy and been a creditor in the bankruptcy. Mr. Goroff misrepresents that OCV was on the creditor service list for Markwell Hillside's bankruptcy. That's absolutely not the case. The facts of record show.
So OCV got nothing of MH's assets?
Correct.
Okay. See, that was the problem.
And that's the loss.
And that because you were not on the notice list.
We were absolutely not. That's of record.
But now you received checks on a regular basis from MH that didn't match the name of the owner that you had in your database, correct?
That is true.
And there was no correction or no, you know, what's going on with this or no red flags because you continue to get paid as Judge Posner said. So my question is, you know, you had notice of this. So if you had acted on this, you might have been on that creditor's list.
But, Your Honor, I don't believe, even if we accept the proposition that there was some notice that something was going on here, that's not sufficient under this court's case law to exempt this case from veil piercing. The best recent example.
But look, all of MH assets were not whatever OCV, even if OCV didn't get any of the assets, MH's other creditors did. So MH's assets are gone. They're all gone, right, because of the bankruptcy. So how did Rohde benefit from the fact that MP was substituted for MH when it was not a method for shielding MH's assets?
Because for a time he received the benefit of a very expensive digital video system that enabled him to operate his hotel.
Wait. What are you talking about?
By using MP as a counterparty.
He used MH. What difference would it? He's paying for this, what you call this great video system. MH is paying every month for it. So where's the shielding of assets? What assets are being shielded?
Ultimately, liability, some responsibility for the balance due on this contract is being shielded because the
but
contracting party...
But that's MH's responsibility.
MP is the contracting party. It's Markwell Properties'
that's
responsibility.
That's your idea. But MH was the one who was paying, and you certainly could go after MH when the payments must have stopped at some point.
They did.
And what happened when they... What did you do when they stopped?
Well, with the new, that is when it all came to light. When the payments stopped, the new owners...
Okay, the payments stopped. Now what do you do?
OCV begins making inquiries to find out what's going on and learns, as is very clear from the emails in the record, learns for the first time that the party that it contracted with was not, in fact, the hotel, but was some other entity. And indicative of...
So what does it do? Does it go to MH and say, look, you've been paying me. It's obvious that you have, that you are the contracting party in fact, although not nominally. Did you go to them and say that we want our money?
In essence, we did. And the trustee said to us, I'm sorry, you need to go chase MP because there's no contract here with Markwell Hillside.
And you accepted that or you appealed that or what? Did you challenge that?
What choice did we have?
The choice was this was your de facto contracting party, that you believed that you were doing business with MH because they were paying you every month. Now, if you didn't think of doing that, who's supposed to be blamed for that?
We wouldn't have known there was... On Command would not have known there was a reason to do that.
Why did your client think that MH was paying every month when your contract was with MP?
In honesty, my client did not think about it at all.
Mm-hmm. Now, the payments would have stopped when MH sold the hotel in late 2006, whether you contracted with MP or MH, right?
Correct. The new owners who bought the hotel out of the bankruptcy did continue to make payments for a while. On Command tried to get them to take an assignment of Markwell Properties' lease. They didn't want to, and that's when all these facts came to light, that, in fact, we were not dealing with the entity that owned the hotel as we thought, that, in fact, it was not the entity in bankruptcy that we were dealing with, and very telling of On Command's lack of knowledge that it was dealing with an empty shell.
Now, when MP... Well, wait a second. When MP was substituted at your request, what inquiry did you make about MP, its assets? You just accept a substitution without any inquiry into assets?
On Command gets a written representation in a contract that states that MP is the owner of a hotel. That's number one. And runs a standard
Yes, but this hotel went broke, so it turned out not to be... So it turned out that MP didn't have any value.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Because the hotel went broke. So what's the loss? I don't understand.
MP did not lack value because the hotel went broke. MP was an empty shell from the beginning that Mr. Rohde used to sign contracts.
Suppose it hadn't been an empty... What do you say is empty shells? It owned the hotel.
No, that's not correct, Your Honor. Markwell Property...
owned the hotel.
Represented that it owned the hotel. It was a lie. It was a misrepresentation in the video services agreement.
So MH owned the hotel.
Right. And Mr. Rohde signed this contract on behalf of Markwell Properties, making an express representation that it owned the hotel. That's why we believe
and
it had
and
assets.
Really, that's your most critical fact in terms of the veil piercing, isn't it?
That's one. It's also...
Why did OCV want MP substituted for MH?
OCV did not want MP substituted for MH. If you, and I know we have to assume the truth of what Mr. Rohde is alleging here, even if you assume that their story is correct, they allege that they believed Markwell Hillside would not have passed credit, and that's why they offered Markwell Properties. On Command did not ask for Markwell Properties. On Command did not ask for an empty shell entity to become a counterparty to the video services agreement. It didn't happen. That would have been senseless.
Well, who brought up the concern about MH lacking creditworthiness?
The general manager and Mr. Rohde on their own assumed that because of Markwell Hillside's bad financial condition that it was creating a problem in being approved for this contract, and they therefore decided to offer MP, an entity which Mr. Rohde knew had no assets or ability to pay or service a contract in any way.
Well, this is very different from what Mr. Goroff told us.
If I may, Your Honor, one further point.
Did Judge Gettleman make a finding about that?
About?
The reason for the substitution.
I believe he made a finding that Mark Wolf, he didn't make a finding as to the reason.
Isn't that critical?
I think it's only critical that Mr. Rohde, and there's no dispute that...
Yeah, it was uncontested.
It's uncontested that...
So that's why he held that this, you know, that portion of the veil-piercing test was met. Because it was uncontested.
There's no contested fact that this was Mr. Rohde's knowing idea. And he, Mr. Patterson, as Mr. Goroff, tries to distance Mr. Rohde from this decision by saying that the general manager was his idea. Well, the deposition testimony shows that the general manager proposed this to Mr. Rohde, who said yes, and who then signed the contract. So Mr. Rohde can't back away from it.
Mm-hmm. Anything further?
Your Honor, I did want to point out that in order to take this, Mr. Goroff made the representation of law that in a contract case where you're a voluntary creditor, you must prove this extra element of fraud. I would like to point out that that's not the law in this circuit. Banco Panamerico, the Wachovia versus Banco Panamerico case, made very clear that the authority upon which Mr. Goroff relies is not to be interpreted that way, and that the only exception is a case in which the party dealing with the shell knew of and uniquely benefited from, purposefully benefited from, the arrangement of using a shell in some way. And a really good example, a recent example of this, is in the Fusion Capital case, 614 Fed 3rd 698, where in that case, Millennium was the shell sought to be pierced in order to reach the individual owners. And Sutara was a company that decided to use Millennium to go public without all the fuss and expense of a registration. It's, in essence, it was a going public by the back door. Fusion got on board with this with its eyes open to and purposely wanted to use this undervalued company, Millennium, for its own purposes. And as the court noted, in that kind of case, Fusion not only understood that Millennium was a shell, but also knew that its shell status was exactly why it was attractive to Sutura.
Was OCV, when it signed the contract with MH, the original contract, or when it came up for renewal, was it concerned about MH's solvency?
No, not that I know of, Your Honor. I believe that On Command's concern was, is the company that it's going to do business with making a representation that it owns a hotel, and does it appear on Dun & Bradstreet as a viable existing corporation? That's how they do business.
Did they do a D&B check on MP?
They did. And they found it to be a company in good standing, which did not reveal anything about its assets.
Let me just ask you, if you had participated in the bankruptcy, how would you have done? How would OCV have done in the bankruptcy?
It would have depended on whether the trustee assumed the contract. It's hard to speculate.
Assuming all that, would you have been a secured creditor? What type of creditor would you have been? In your best case scenario, how would you characterize it?
Probably we would have a security interest in the equipment that we installed there. We would have immediately deinstalled it and taken it back and put it to other use. Other than that, as to the contract, the early termination fees.
You ever got your equipment back?
Eventually, I believe, yes, they did remove the equipment.
Was there lost time? Is that what you're saying?
They lost time. They lost, they thought, I mean, the contract is designed to last a certain amount of time because there's an initial investment of capital in putting in this equipment. And when it's terminated early, they don't make back their investment.
So your company, OCV actually didn't know about the bankruptcy?
It did not know about it until the new owners appeared and made payments, which caused them to investigate, and that's when...
Well, what about the trustee? Didn't the trustee keep making payments?
For a time.
Did they notice that a trustee was making payments rather than MH?
It's the same issue. The checks, for a time, I believe, as Mr. Goroff has pointed out, did say Holiday and Hillside as debtor in possession.
And OCV didn't notice?
Well, that... I'm not sure exactly what the timing is when that started, but that's very late in the game, Your Honor.
They accepted checks from a trustee in possession, and they don't inquire what's going on. We don't have a contract with this company, but it pays us, and now it's trustee in bankruptcy is paying us. Well, as long as we're being paid, we don't care.
Well, that was very late in the game, Your Honor.
I don't care how late it was. Why wasn't there some inquiry? And look, what would OCV have gotten out of the bankruptcy?
I think I've answered.
What did the other unsecured creditors get out of the bankruptcy?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I don't know what the extent
of the
plan was.
Well, how do you know you had any loss, that you suffered anything?
Our position is that's not the measure of damages in a veil-piercing claim. The measure of damages, we're not required to prove damages. In a veil-piercing claim, we have a judgment. We have a judgment against an entity.
And you have to prove damages.
Well, we have to prove that we have a right. It's a remedy, veil piercing. We have to prove that we have a right to enforce our damages against a different party. I don't believe that the law requires us.
You acted irresponsibly in failing to pursue your remedies against MH. You can't turn around and say that and collect the damages from someone else when you were careless.
I don't believe that's enough to avoid veil piercing under Seventh Circuit law.
Why? Because you're not trying to prove fraud, right? You say you don't have to prove fraud.
Correct.
So if it isn't fraud, why is it such a terrible wrong that you should be able to get a windfall? You're looking for a windfall because you were dealing with MH. MH goes broke. I'm guessing you wouldn't have gotten anything in the bankruptcy. And now you turn around, try to find a deep pocket somewhere, because to remedy the carelessness in accepting payment from someone who isn't a party to the contract.
Your Honor, we did not benefit in any way from dealing with this shell corporation, MP. We didn't know it was a shell. We didn't benefit from it. We did business with a company that was represented to own a hotel. That's sufficient. The fact that we have established that Mr. Rohde used these companies.
But despite the substitution of MP, in fact, you continue to deal with MH and be paid by MH. And then by MH's trustee in bankruptcy. And you just sleepwalk through all this. And now you want a windfall because you missed out on a bankruptcy.
I disagree with Your Honor that it's a windfall. We, again, had a contract with an entity, and there was a misrepresentation as to that entity. We had a right to be paid, mm-hmm. and all of the criteria have been met. It's really irrefutable the way these companies were used by Mr. Rohde to support his scheme of using a company with no assets to incur the liabilities and to keep the liabilities off the company with assets. It's classic case where for veil piercing.
What's the company with assets?
Pardon me?
What's the company with assets?
It was Markwell Hillside
at
the time. Well, it did at the time. It did at
and
the
did
time.
And did he steal those assets, or did they all go down the drain in bankruptcy?
They paid his salary. He used the assetless shell to sign contracts while he protected the company with assets, which was paying his salary.
That's your concern. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much, yeah. Mr. Shibar. Mr. Goroff?
Your Honors, I've heard a lot of misrepresentations in the last 15 minutes. I'll try to clear up as many as I can. First of all, the Dun & Bradstreet check was not on credit. It was simply on, are you registered with the Secretary of State? The admission is that, that OCV did no credit check, did not care about the financial wherewithal of its counterparties, and only looked into the profit it was making at the hotel.
Is the record going to, if we comb it, is it going to stand up against for one or the other?
You are absolutely, I would say, damn well right, Your Honor. As to the bankruptcy, if you look at the notice of meeting of creditors, which occurs 4 days after the signing of the VSA, page 510, it comes out of OCV's files. They knew of the original meeting of creditors.
Wait, you lost me. 510. 4 days after what?
The VSA, the contract, was signed by OCV. They learn.
4 days after the
bankruptcy?
The MP contract?
No. After the MP contract is signed, correct, 4 days later, two things happen. William Patterson, and Your Honor, Judge Roedner, Mr. Patterson is a third party. He's a former employee of MH. He's not Mr. Rohde. And his testimony, I mean, he hasn't worked with Mr. Rohde for years. And his testimony is unrefuted here against David Redpath, who said he couldn't pick Mr. Patterson out of a lineup. Now, so Mr. Patterson testified he called OCV to say, by the way, MH is in bankrupt.
Can we go back to 4 days after MP?
Yes.
Because 4 days after MP,
Your Honor, MP signed the contract December 20th of 2004. 7 weeks go by before OCV signs it on February 5th, 2005. By the way, in the interim, OCV accepts a check from Markwell Hillside doing business as the Holiday Inn. On February 8th or so, a Chapter 11 bankruptcy is filed for Markwell Hillside. Bill Patterson, the general manager of Markwell Hillside, because he knows the commercial realities, calls up OCV and says, and this is unrefuted, read Patterson's affidavit and deposition, the company has filed for bankruptcy. OCV then has, and it's at this appendix of page A510, in its files, out of an OCV Bates number, the first notice of meeting of creditors. Now, OCV was not formally listed originally as a creditor, but it continues to receive checks from the debtor all through the bankruptcy, including, as of June 22, 2005.
When was OCV formally listed as a creditor?
June 22, 2005. Mr. Rohde causes Markwell Hillside to go before Judge Bruce Black at the time and asks him for permission to keep paying OCV. OCV is listed at page 512, specifically of the appendix. If you look there, you'll see on command as a line item. And thereafter, OCV gets every month, while Markwell Hillside exists, a check that says, Markwell Hillside doing business as the Holiday Inn Hillside, debtor in possession. OCV then follows the bankruptcy, and then in September of 2006, which is 19 months later, it has in its files, and this is at A513, the motion for the sale of Markwell Hillside as the owner of the Holiday Inn Hotel to a company by a gentleman named Roy Patel. David Redpath, and I can look for the email, but it's in the record, then writes, we're hoping to get the new owner, Mr. Patel, to take over the contract, the VSA. Mr. Patel for 3 months pays OCV, so they get paid by the new owner of the hotel. And he has an affidavit that is also in this appendix. He then says that they overplay their hand. They want too much money, and he tells them, take your equipment. There's no delay, Your Honor. Take your equipment and go. And that's what happens. They get their equipment back, and they're talking to the trustee who says, well, you know, technically the contract is with, you know, MP. This is what Rick Fogel told them in December of 2006. They don't file an administrative claim. They could have. I practiced bankruptcy, among other things, and they could have. They didn't. They didn't say they provided service to Markwell Hillside. Instead, their general counsel says, well, wait, this should be good for us. And that deposition testimony and letter that after the email that says that from a Michael Cyran, C-Y-R-A-N, is also in this volume, it should be good for us that the contract is not with the debtor, because then, even though Markwell Hillside is bankrupt, we can go after MP. And for the first time, in January of 2007, which is 2 years later, they make a claim on MP. They knew MP was not the owner. Mr. Patterson, our third party, told them so when he proposed it. And, Your Honor, with all due respect, you're wrong. There is absolutely, the undisputed facts in the record show that the reason MP was put there had nothing to do with credit. The credit only comes up in Mr. Patterson's mind because Mr. Redpath says to him, we have a D&B ownership problem. You hear Dun & Bradstreet, all of us, I think, naturally assume that means credit. And then he asks if there is any other avenue or any other facility we can do business with. And why did he do that? After 4 months of negotiating with Markwell Hillside, after 2 years of getting checks from Markwell Hillside, he did that because he screwed up. Because what he filed with the OCV corporate department, which my clients never knew about.
Who is he?
David Redpath, the OCV employee, said that the owner was a company called 4400 Frontage Road. This was the contract request form, November 20th, 2004. It is in the record as well. Contract request form. It's an OCV exhibit. OCV tells him, we can't find it. We're not going to accept it. And so Redpath, because he goofed, goes to Patterson and says, we need another avenue and another entity. He doesn't say why. He doesn't say, I goofed. So Patterson thinks MH can't do it. He hears D&B. Patterson thinks it's because of MH's credit, and Patterson proposes MP because he knows MP has been successfully used not to protect Mr. Rohde, but to protect Markwell Hillside in the event of, not against a creditor, but in the event of a catastrophic accident in a lease with Daimler Chrysler. And he tells Mr. Redpath that. That's also undisputed. And Mr. Redpath in his deposition says, I have no memory of this. I just remember visiting there once. I talked to someone. I don't know if he was a man or a woman. I couldn't pick him out of a lineup.
Okay, thank you very much.
I'm terribly sorry.
Mr. Garf. So we're going to be slightly irregular and ask Mr. Shebar if he has any response briefly.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. I do. Mr. Garf represented that A512 was some type of notice list that would have included on command as a getting notice of the bankruptcy. It is not that. If you look at A512, it is an internal schedule of Markwell Hillside, which lists on command as being a recipient, as being a vendor. Nothing indicates that on command received notice of this.
What about this 2-8? Why don't you go down the dates like he did? 2-8. Where the chapter 11 is filed for MH and Patterson calls OCV.
Okay.
And go through these various facts, because he was very specific in pointing to the record and tell us what's wrong with that.
There is absolutely no evidence, I mean, other than the affidavit and summary judgment. We dispute that we were notified. In fact, a number of things. First of all, we did not receive notice of A510, which is the actual notice of bankruptcy and of bar date. On command did not receive it. There's no evidence that it received it at the time the bankruptcy occurred. The evidence is that the first communication with the trustee, and if you read these emails that we've cited, the first communication with the bankruptcy trustee is not until December of 2006, and on command begins making these inquiries to find out who is who in this game of asset, who owns assets and who doesn't. That's when this was obtained. There is no evidence to the contrary. Moreover, all of this talk about these ongoing negotiations.
Yeah, just a very simple factual question. Mr. Gorf said there was no delay in the removal of the equipment.
Okay. I don't have any basis to dispute that.
But in your argument, you said there was delay. That's one of your costs. That's what you said five minutes ago.
Your Honor, that was my recollection of the facts. I have nothing to point to in the record to contradict at this point. May I make one other?
Do you think it's there?
Pardon me?
Do you think it is in the record? Is it just that you're not recalling?
It may be as either an admission or a denial in the summary judgment statements of facts. I'm not sure. It may be in the record. One other point. With Mr. Goroff saying that there was all this dialogue and on command, knowing that Markwell Hillside was the owner of the hotel from the beginning, 4400 Frontage, which was the prior owner, was required under contract to notify, to give written notice to On Command of any sale of the hotel. There is nothing in the record that they did that. They did not, in fact, notify On Command. Mr. Goroff has not, Mr. Rohde has not produced any evidence that notice was given.
Well, I don't understand. So was the owner 4400 or MP or MH or what?
Ultimately, it was MH, but we were not, On Command was not given notice of that transfer. The hotel was sold from 4400 to Markwell Hillside without notice to On Command.
But the checks, did the checks start from that day? Were they the checks from MP from that date of the sale from 4400?
The checks from Markwell Hillside?
Yeah.
Or about the time of the sale, that's correct.
So at the time of the sale, so there was no check from MH from the beginning of the
sale?
MP. From MP.
No.
Or from 4400?
Well, I presume that when 4400 was the owner, the checks were coming from 4400.
Yeah, but after the...
After the sale, they came from Markwell Hillside. But I read...
4400 sells it to MP, and then it's...
Markwell Hillside. 4400 sold to MH, to Markwell Hillside, without giving On Command notice.
And the checks, once that sale happened, that's what I'm trying to get clear. The checks were from MH?
Correct.
For how long a period?
From that point forward.
So are you saying that 4400, you think that OCV was getting checks from 4400, then 4400 sells the hotel to MH, and then... But OCV doesn't know about it.
No.
But then it starts getting checks from someone else, from MH.
No.
So it's getting checks from 4400, then it gets checks from MH. Then it learns that that the hotel has been sold to MP. It's still getting checks from MH.
Your Honor,
it seems different to who the owner is.
Not that. I concede that there's been a lack of diligence on OCV's part in following it. So it's a large company. It deals with a lot of counterparties. However, my point is that is not sufficient under the test in Fusion and other cases of this circuit. That is not sufficient when we have met all of these other criteria for piercing the corporate veil. There must be an actual benefit to the party seeking to pierce the veil, not simply...
The relevance of
notice.
Lack of diligence is it suggests, you know, look, big companies are not more careless than small companies, right? You don't say, oh, it's a big company, you can't expect it to be diligent. That would be ridiculous, right? Big companies are big because they're successful, they're efficiently managed, they're diligent. But certainly lack of diligence, what you call lack of diligence, can also be interpreted as indifference. You know, that's what Mr. Goroff was saying. He said they dealt with whoever owned the hotel. They didn't care. This was a lucrative contract. It's a Holiday Inn, right?
Correct.
The Holiday Inn. Until the disaster we dealt with in our earlier case, the environmental damage to it. So it's dealing with a Holiday Inn, and it's happy to deal with a Holiday Inn. And it certainly doesn't pursue its creditor remedies with any kind of energy. And finally, it picks on Mr. Rohde for a small amount of money also. Anyway, thank you very much to both counsel. We will we don't want to hear any more, but we'll puzzle over this and see if we can come up with some. Okay, you can give us the citation.
If there are citations, anyone in the courtroom can come up.
Mr. Patterson's affidavit is at A407. And he discusses calling 2 days after the bankruptcy. He said he received a call from Markwell, from OCV's rather credit department, wanting to know why they hadn't paid. And he told them it was in bankruptcy. That's a paragraph.
8407.
847 is where the affidavit begins. The relevant text is paragraph 31, A413 to 14. Mr.
Okay. Okay, yeah, well, okay. Yeah. So Judge Williams suggested, in view of this, these
morass
file disputes,
right.
Why we will give you, we'll give each of you 14 days to submit a further brief dealing with these factual questions that have arisen at the argument.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, well, thank you very much. It was really a fun argument, leaving us deeply.